is there the Chazasa Eshvara Shatimi that the system of the judges were being judged? Chazasa Taratimila brings down that the judge would say, take the toothpick out of your teeth. So he would say, take the beam from between your eyes. In other words, there was no authority, no authoritative figures that could control society, nobody to look up to. So it was a corrupt society. Then we said, Vayhi Rav Baretz, and we were wondering whether the Rav was a result, a natural result, or whether it was a natural result of their corruption, or whether it was brought on by God. Okay, we didn't really decide either way. We said if it was brought on by God, then you have to define why the how this was the proper punishment for the crime, right? So we said that the we said the rav is the removal of the title. Okay, next point. Now we said v'yilchish beislachem Yehuda logav steimo who ishtavayu shneimanav. So we said this was Elimelech. So what type of person was Elimelech? Question is, was he corrupt? Was he not corrupt? So we find that in the Tarat Mimah, Pasuk Gimel, Vayomas Elimelech, and also in the mainly in the Yalkut. Yeah, the Yalkut brings down that he was two reasons. Have you got the Yalkut? So
the Yalkut Shemoni.
Yalkut Shemoni on Veshem Oish Elimelech. So it says Elimelech Machlam Vechonim Gedolei Ador Hayu. You see, they were Gedolim. Neiman and Shuf. So one says was one out of Chutzlars. Out of Israel, Chutzlars. The other one said was that they should have been Mavakesh Rachmim on the door. Another one says that because they were this Rashi quotes because these Rashi quotes because they were stingy. Stingy. They couldn't stand the people banging at the doors.
That's Elimelech.
I'm sorry. That's the Taras Mimah. Taras Mimah. Okay. So we said like this. We said that the we went on the pshat that everybody seems to hold the Gedolei Ador. So we went on the pshat that they left because of either because of stinginess or because they didn't want to be mispalled for the door. So we said really that was just two forms of the same pshat. What is a pshat? And the man was a Gedolei Ador. Apparently was a genius, great Talmud Chacham, right? A great Talmud Chacham, great philosopher. So what was wrong with his philosophy? Why did he die? He died as an onesh. What was wrong with his philosophy? So he said that his philosophy was, simply, his philosophy was to learn Torah, but it was only for the self. Well, you didn't care about anybody else. Just take the good for yourself. In other words, he didn't abide by justice. Right? So, he, in other words, it was a time of Shvatar Shoftim, which means a time of moral decay, right? The system was decaying. And he didn't care. He just watched himself. He took the good for himself, sat and learned, and that's it. Didn't worry about anybody else. So that's why it was Chayav Mesa. Okay. Now, the question was, why... so you have two personalities, two philosophers. There's a philosopher that doesn't tell you for himself, and then there's a philosopher that that reaches a higher level where he loves justice. Right? So we want to define, first of all, what is that state of the just philosopher? And secondly, What prevents the guy in the first state, who is a selfish philosopher, from reaching the state of being a just philosopher? Okay? So, the first thing is, we took the first question first. We said, why should a person do justice? And what is that state in which, same question, but another form, what is that state in which the philosopher finds himself, in which he loves to do justice? So we said like this, we said, really, there are two sets of mitzvahs. One set of mitzvahs is the mitzvahs that a person does for himself. What's the benefit for the self? Like learning, tefillin, all the other mitzvahs, the means for the self. But there's another set of, there's something else, which is simply God's will. That's justice. And we quoted the Rambam, Perek Chafei in Sanhedrin, where the Rambam says that even though the Am is a bunch of dummies, and they don't really understand the philosophy, and they live like fools, they don't live intelligently, right? They're just blind by the mitzvahs of specific ego, not for any knowledge, right? He says still that, Perek Chafei Hilchos Sanhedrin, he says still that you're machuyev, not allowed to embarrass them, not allowed to degrade them, you have to act cover with them, you're not allowed to misuse them for your own purpose. Why? He says, because this is the nation that God took out of its rank. Right? So you see, in other words, it's his will that this nation should be established. You might not think much of them, but this is his will. And the question is, why should a guy abide by God's will? That was the question. So we said like this. We said, really, that this is, that the it's a natural result. In other words, like this, that the, when the soul becomes perfected, the soul loves wisdom. And because the soul loves wisdom, so then the soul loves God. And when the soul loves God, so the soul loses the love of the self. See, initially it starts out for the self, because the person wants to better himself, wants to have an enjoyment. But then it goes from the state of the self, it goes to the love of God. In other words, it's like a love affair. That's why Melech compares it to a love affair. First the guy says, why should he go with this girl? Oh, he wants the benefit of love. But then once he goes with her, he forgets about himself completely. And he simply becomes completely attached to her. That's the change from narcissism to object love. Ah. Now in the state of object love, the self is lost. Now since the self is lost, so therefore he simply, a natural result, he will do whatever the girl wants. Because in her mind, her, her desires become his. Because the self is completely gone. That's why love is a psychotic state. Now, the thing is this, that the neurotic state. The thing is that that's the same thing that happens with God. So think like this. First, the guy does it for his own benefit, but then he's in love with God. Once he's in love with God, he loses the self. Once he loses the self, so therefore he loves. Since he loves that source of the knowledge, so therefore he naturally will want to do whatever that source requires of him. Okay? Whatever that source wants, not what the source requires of him. Whatever the source wants. See, he is since he loves that source, so therefore he doesn't care about the self anymore. The self is lost. He naturally would go towards whatever that source wants. That's the natural result. Because he forgets about the self. What prevents him from doing those things? Because he thinks about himself. You see, but if the self is lost, he's totally with God. So therefore, he will definitely do whatever that source wants. He will definitely do. Okay.
Understand? Then when you start doing it,
yes.
You see, then what takes the place is the love of the learning itself, right? But both are qualitative differences.
What's the difference between second and third stage?
I'm good. Second stage is what?
First stage is where I thought the first two stages are both narcissistic, but the first stage is totally why I do it for some emotional reason. The second narcissistic stage is why I do it because I love the action of learning.
Rational reason.
The rational reason, right? Now when I totally remove.
You mean the Hamaon and the philosopher, self-philosopher, philosopher's three.
What?
You mean the Hamaon?
The Hamaon, right? Yeah, but I mean even the philosopher, this is the stages that he must go through.
In other words,
when I start out learning as a child, I'm part of our own, right?
Yeah.
And I learned because my father taught me to, super ego, whatever.
We're discussing that now.
Yeah,
The first stage is, naturally, where the guy does the thing for wrong reason, like super ego. Next stage, he does it for selfishness. It's still selfish, still narcissistic, but it's rational. He's still flat. It's like Ali Malach, right? And the third stage, of course, is where the guy is lost of the narcissism, totally object love. Okay, now we must remember, therefore, the answer to the question. In other words, justice is a symptom. The act of doing justice is a symptom of a perfected soul. That's what it is. So you can't ask the question why a guy should do justice. Because justice is a natural result of the soul which reaches a certain state. And the best thing is for the soul to be in that state. You see? Right? Okay. Is that clear? That's right. It's an expression of his love of that object. It's not an inherent benefit. But a person who reaches a certain perfected state will naturally do this action. You see? That state is love of God. Once he reaches the state of love of God, he naturally has to do that action because there's nothing to impede him. He's going to follow. That's going to happen to him. That's what's going to happen to him. Right? And that state is the most perfected state. Okay.
What's that?
Okay. Also, we'll say another thing. Namely that, as Plato says, the good action leads to a good soul. Good actions improve the soul. And therefore, since he recognizes the love of God, so therefore this action, the action of justice itself, improves the soul. Okay. Yeah. We also brought a raya from the Rambam, because the Rambam says that in Sefer Mitzvos, in the mitzvah of Avas Hashem, one of the earliest ones, I think the first one, second one, so he says that part of Avas Hashem is to get other people to love God, like Avram did. Right? So you see that this is all, why is that part of it? Because that's justice. That's justice. Okay.
Putting more libido into the love of the object when he expresses his love.
The next point we took up was the point that we mentioned before. We just reviewed it. The question was, why is that the best state to be in? Right? And we mentioned there's three types of existences. There's the animal, right? And then there is man, right? And then there is philosopher.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So he said the animal has a good life because the animal has no conflict. The animal has a reality principle, the animal has knowledge, but there's a qualitative differentiation between the knowledge of the animal, the way the knowledge of the animal functions, and the way the knowledge, man's perception of knowledge and animal's perception of knowledge. An animal's perception of knowledge, and knowledge is only a means for the instinct. But there is no objective recording in the mind of the animal of knowledge. It's just all those things which assist him in securing his needs, to satisfy his instinct. That's why an animal might notice another animal die, but he'll never worry about that. Because that fact has no relevance to his instincts. So that fact is completely canceled out. He's not going to think to himself, I'm going to die too, this is going to happen to me. Ah. But he'll remember that in order to get the banana down from the tree, from the corner of the cave, he has to move the chair over and get up and get it. Why? Because that's necessary for his instinct. See? So there's no conflict between the animal's knowledge and his instinct. The knowledge is completely in the service of the instinct. Then you have the unfortunate creature known as man. Now, that creature has two wheels working simultaneously. He has the wheel of knowledge, which plays an objective picture.
Reality.
Then reality principle. Then he has the wheel of instinct. And somehow or other, these two wheels do not always turn.
Not always. Never.
In direction at the same time. They don't work together. Now, what happens is like this. Reality starts smashing the instincts. Why? For instance, the guy knows he's going to die. He knows he can get sick. He reads in the papers, one out of four people get cancer. That reality wheel starts working against this thing. These things gets worried. Right? Then all this knowledge, which is objective and not in the service of the instinct, will definitely cause him conflict. His only solution is repression. Repression, we know the results of that. So, seems there's no way that the guy could get out of it. He must live a life of torture. Then we have the third being. He's a very rare being, not known as man, but known as philosopher. Now, this creature has the opposite. He's the exact opposite of the animal. He has the instinctual wheel is subservient to the reality wheel. All his libido is consumed in the enjoyment of the knowledge of reality. So therefore, since his own personal satisfaction is not important, is immaterial, all he cares about is understanding and the enjoyment of the reality wheel. That's his whole libido is tied to the enjoyment of the reality wheel. So therefore, whatever is reality, he enjoys because that's the way it is. All the instinctual energy is being consumed in enjoying the reality. So therefore, whatever happens to him doesn't matter. It's like Hume. Hume said he knew he was going to die. He knew they told him he has a very serious illness, not going to make it. He says those are the best few years of his life was even though he knew he was going to die. Why? So that's an impersonal thing. He doesn't care about that. See? To him, it doesn't matter. In other words, he can enjoy everything in reality. Because since he loves reality, and everything that occurs is a result of reality, so he can't hate any particular event, because he knows that that's an absurdity. He's going to hate the event that he's going to die, but that's part of reality. It's all part of a big scheme. It's not like somebody's, so this event is happening to me. You know, why did this happen to me? That's a stupid question, because it's all part of the great reality, and he loves reality, so therefore anything that happens, on the contrary, every happiness and every event is merely an expression of this great reality which he loves. So therefore, it can't affect him. It can't bother him emotionally, you see. And he enjoys it. So that is the only creature that has the no conflict. So you have two creatures of no conflict, philosopher and animal. But man, unfortunately, is caught in the middle. So he said that's why that state is the state of object love. That is the state in which there is no conflict. Plus, in that state, he's completely in love with knowledge, and therefore there's no care about the self. So therefore there's no pain as far as the self is concerned. So it's a perfect state. What? See, man. See, that's why we say an animal doesn't worry, because that wheel stops playing the moment it's not necessary. See, the wheel of reality stops playing. Stops. See. But in man, the wheel of reality keeps playing. That's what kills him. That's why, what does man do? Man spends $1 million trying to take these pills, pot, all these things. What is he trying to do? He tries to stop the reality wheel. That's what all these things are.
It's escape.
Right. Yeah. Even if a guy enjoys the learning, but if it's for the self, he enjoys the self, right? It's not object love. So then naturally, if he's going to get killed, right, if something's happening, he's going to stop learning, so if it's going to bother him, that thought has to bother him. Right? Someone with completely object love that nothing can bother them.
We used to always say that.
You
should enjoy learning.
The Rambam in Yisrael Torah, Parak Beis, the Rambam presented a question. Even though you see, the Christian world accepted it as a simple thing to love God. They just, emotional fervor and love God. So Ross says, how can you love God? It's impossible. Because there's no object there. Because we don't have any definition of God. God is beyond definition. So the Rambam explains the Sephora, same terms. You can only love has two aspects. One aspect of love is that there's an object, that the love consummates itself in an object, but the other aspect of love is attraction. There's an attraction, desire to be with the loved object. Now with God, there's only that second thing. There's only the attraction, but there is never any object love, because you cannot conceive of any object. It's just she'ifa l'makom. That's all, desire to be. Since he loves knowledge, so there's an attraction to the source of reality. God is the ultimate source of his attraction to that thing because he loves the knowledge, and this is the ultimate knowledge. You see? That's what it is. This is a qualification of object love. It's object love without an object. Okay, you got it? Okay. The Rambam explains that you could know God in two ways. You can know God by his essence, and you can know him by his accidents. Right? Which means it is that being who?
Right.
That's Reisa Sacharai, a funny lawyer. You want to know the face? You see the face? You recognize the guy. But if you see him from the back, you just know he's that guy who has that those type of shoulders, whatever it is. See?
So there is an object in psychology.
Yeah, but the object is only accidental.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, you know that there is a real object which is the cause of this knowledge and is the source of the knowledge, and therefore his desire to see the whole picture. Since he has desire to see the whole world of knowledge, he has desire to know God. That's what he has, I mean? As much as he could, has desire to know the ultimate reality.
Really
in the case of love, so there's the object. Now you see the object, and because you see the object, so therefore you're attracted to it. Over here it works the opposite way. Over here you can't know the object, right? But you're attracted to something, you're attracted to the object. You understand what I'm saying? Yeah. Or Shabbat is God, right? You know that one?
No.
Okay. You're all down. I think I have that on another tape, though. There's two questions that Moshe Rabbeinu is God. Two questions Moshe Rabbeinu has got. One question was, Harein Nas Rechecha, Harein Nas Rechecha, Harein Nas Kvedecha, right? What's the difference? The Rechecha and Kvedecha. The Rechecha means the pattern. It's the pattern. It's like when a guy studies a disease, right? So a man studies a disease, the first thing you know is certain patterns. He isolates certain patterns. He sees cancer's cause in this way, right?
Symptoms.
This cancer, that's that. He isolates the things. He knows the patterns, right? That's one thing. But then he has to find the cause. That thing which creates those patterns, right? Like we get down to a germ. So now he sees the essence. This is the thing which causes these patterns. First, in pathology, he's just studying the patterns. In many diseases today, we don't know the patterns. We don't know the cause. Right? As again, we know the cause. That's the same thing in relation to God. Moshe Rabbeinu wanted to know two things. First of all, he wanted to know, what are the patterns of the Ashgacha? How does it work? Science. Most people think of Ashgacha, they think, from thing. It's a science, it's knowledge. You see, God operates in a certain way. Let's see how he operates. So we want to know what are the patterns of his actions. Second thing is, what is you? What are you that these patterns should result from you? That's the essence.
Right.
And you can only know patterns.
Okay.
You can never know the thing. Right. Be like a pathologist who's studying a disease and wants to know the cause of the disease. Not for practical purposes, just for the knowledge of it. See? Just to see how it operates. So therefore, because he knows the patterns and he enjoys seeing the way it works, he sees the order there, he wants to say, hey, what is that thing? What could that thing be like that creates these patterns? You see? That's the same thing over here.
So the love is equivocal. It's that he wants to know, because of the love of knowledge, so he wants to know what God is.
That's right. Because of the love of knowledge, he wants to know the object of God. Right? He's attracted to God because of his love of knowledge. But there is no object of God in his mind because that is no beyond definition. That's why it says Moshe Hashem says God answered Moshe on the first one, Rechecha, but not on the second one, Kvedecha.
Just because of love
objects.
So
he's
showing the film here. The back of his head,
it says.
He says it's only
there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's an interesting thing. No, the back means the accidents. Yeah, right. The tilling and the back of the head is probably just that.
The next point is we follow through Eli Melech's life, and we see that we see that what happened, right? So they went outside of Eretz Yisrael, and they were attracted to these Nashim Moavias. Why were they attracted to the Moavias? Because they also had that same quality of tzarayim, selfishness, right? So we said that when we started going, what is tzarayim? We said tzarayim depends upon having an incorrect idea of reality. What is incorrect idea of reality? He has the concept that he's concept of immortality, fancy of immortality, right? Because we really recognize the true position, so you know that ownership is nothing. There's no such thing as real ownership in this world. But he can't recognize it. Okay. So the fantasy of immortality is based upon Gnosticism. So since it's based on Gnosticism, so we said that the emotion of Gnosticism was still prevalent, right? But now we notice another thing. That what's that about Machmon Mechelion? So we said they married Nashim Moavios without Geras, right? So you see they did Nevera. Why? What does it mean? It means that they deteriorated from the Gnosticism of the intellectual to the emotional Gnosticism. And they left the whole system. Why? Because once they left the Eretz Yisrael, they didn't have the influence of the society anymore. Once they lost the influence of the society, so then the emotion took over completely. That's why they died. Because they had no, they reached into the lowest level already. So we mentioned that sometimes an external factor like Sviva could help a guy, could affect a guy. But only, it will only be of value if he uses it to really perfect his emotion. But if he doesn't use it to perfect his emotion, then it's not going to do anything. As a matter of fact, he sees the same emotion which they didn't perfect caused them to leave the Sviva. Why? Because that emotion of Gnosticism prevented them from, they didn't want to help anybody, so therefore they left, they got out of there. And therefore they lost the whole thing. Okay. No, the answer is very simple. The answer is, she stayed with her husband because it was the influence of the husband that caused it to stay there. But once she lost the influence of the husband, so she wasn't totally ruined, so therefore she went back to where it's real. Because she was in the state of least where she knew that she needs the...
She didn't lose the narcissistic...
Okay, starting. So she went back to... that was this possible. What's his name? She returned. Now she went to return. Now why didn't she? Why did she tell them about the Geras? Why did she have a discussion before? Why she left the house? What did we say?
We said that.
She wanted to go back to Israel, right? And they followed her. So on the road, they started to have discussions of Geras. And they had discussions of Geras. Then what happened to the discussions of Geras, right? At Pasukas, we said that she told them that she said that they'll definitely get paid back because she didn't want them to remain there because they felt that she didn't want them to follow her, rather, and go there to Israel because of any personal gain. So she said, no, on the contrary, you did everything and you get paid back and have a wonderful life. Okay, go ahead. Next thing she said was that the best thing for them is marriage. The best physical life is to have marriage. So she said that you should go and get married and you'll have a great life.
She also said,
that's it off in your days, up to your days. In other words, she showed them that over here, first she showed them over there, they're going to have a very good life. And over here, it's empty. There's nothing. It's a waste of time. Showed them the contrast. Over there is great, and over here is absolutely nothing. Uh-huh. That's Pasuk Bav. Pasuk Gimel?
Yeah.
Pasuk Gimel is the last part. Ki Yotzei Biyad Hashem. So she told them that don't think that if you, just because you accept the Yehadis, that you're going to have a good life. You see Yotzei Biyad Hashem. You see God... God acted against me.
You got to be scared.
And that's self-scare. Self-scare, so you have to tell them that whatever happens closer is going to happen to you. Now you're part of my soul, and before you have a battle, not only, in other words, not only because it's not runners, but you're part of my soul, before certain things can happen. And so you have to find Tishak and Vedovka. A Tishak means that, and it says it wasn't a Nashik of Chazal, it was not a Nashik of Tiflis. It was a real Nashik. Tiflis means nonsense. Just emotions. Empty emotions. It wasn't empty emotions. She really recognized the truth. But the only thing is that she, her emotions couldn't follow. She was a philosophical neurotic. Okay? But the emotions followed. Got it?
There's stuff about it.
There's stuff about it. The emotions followed. You should stop. El amo fi el aloha. So Chazal said first el amo and then el aloha. You see? Because once she went back, then really at that point she recognized the truth. But once, in other words, we said the state of philosophical neurotic is very... It's temporary state. That's why it's very shaky. Very hard to look that way. Yeah, it's tremendous conflict. So that's what happened. She was in conflict. See? Instead of conflict, then she went back to Amor, and then Nevelah Ha'ar, because she had to get rid of the conflict. And what we said also, we said here was another thing, that she got it from another point. Why? Because it's superego. Because a person doesn't like to do things alone. One doesn't permanently. The person might abstain from doing a harmful action, but somebody else does it, they will go ahead and do it. Why? Because it breaks the superego. When you're doing it alone, superego, how can you do that? It's crazy. Oh, the other one's doing it. Everybody's doing it. So she gave her that. She didn't want it. She wanted to see if the emotion of superego was there. That's what's keeping her. What pasuk is that?
Pasuk
Tezayin. Tezayin was, and then Tezayin and Yudzayin also was what?
Yeah, right.
So we said one thing. Those two psukim, Tezayin and Yudzayin,
right,
which seemed to be emotional, and everybody was the main part of the Eris. So with that goes, like, shall go, you know, and the whole thing, emotions. The Chazal and Tebet, all halacha. Everyone else is halacha. Shetel Chiyadayich is halal hilchus tchumen, and this one's almost, everything is halacha over there. It means that she had a philosophical understanding.
Well, I missed that.
It wasn't emotions. On the contrary, every one of those statements is not emotions. Every one of those statements is all halacha, called halacha, all logical halacha. So it means that she had a recognition of the truth of the system. You see? It wasn't just a just not an emotion. She wants to go with Ruth wherever she goes.
Why?
Not that Ruth wants to go with Naomi wherever she goes. Pasuk Tezayin Al-Tifgabi. Al-Tifgabi means that because Chazal say that if you don't,
it's not you alone, wherever somebody else. So you see, so it wasn't the personal thing, wasn't the personal passion to nothing. It wasn't a personal passion to nothing. He said, don't bother me. If you stop me, then I'm going to get somebody else, and that'll be you. So, it wasn't a personal thing at all. It wasn't a personal thing. It was a regular, every emotion was a personal.